It stuck out in my mind how important that job was. And I developed a lot of respect for journalists, specifically TV journalists.
And I realized after I did some stories that made the university mad that it was a lot of fun to piss people off.
The sense that what you write has a chance to really sort of shape policy, and that policy really will determine sort of whether people know what they're getting for their tax dollars.
Now, from WGN Radio News, a look back at the day that was, and a deeper look into issues and stories with Andrea Dollars and the reporters on 720 WGN.
806 in Chicago, 720 WGN, greatest city in the world, greatest radio station in the world, and I am so excited to have in studio, I think, my opinion, but I think it's pretty good of a general consensus, two of the best political reporters without doubt in Chicago and definitely within the state of Illinois, Mike Flannery and Amanda Vinicky. Thank you so much for being in studio tonight. I know it was a big night. We're just coming off of the Lightfoot Preckwinkle debate. So I thought we would talk a little bit about that and how we thought each candidate did. We were sharing a little bit of opinion before the during the break and during the newscast, but first of all, welcome, and how do you think the debate went? Amanda, why don't we start with you?
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you for having me on this beautiful night. I love talking journalism and politics any old day, but particularly with you guys and all these WGN listeners. The debate. So first of all, I think that you have two women who are totally and completely comfortable doing this sort of thing. While Lori Lightfoot is a novice in the political arena to some capacity in that she hasn't run for elected office before, she, of course, is a former prosecutor. So she is certainly at ease. And Toni Preckwinkle has done her fair share of these sort of forums throughout the years, has been responsive to reporters' questions as an alderman, of course, as Cook County board president. And therefore, they're on when they do this sort of thing. The very first televised debate leading up to the runoff, that's when really I think you saw a lot of the rancor. And as time has gone on, it's almost as if they have found their groove some. So I would say that, you know, they're good at this and somewhat refreshing in that you do get more details from each of these candidates than I've heard from, gosh, doing a lot of these forums. To a degree, neither of them have been responsive to questions about what really they're going to do about the city budget. And there are some big question marks that should be looming over all of Chicago about what is going to go on there. And neither Lightfoot nor Preckwinkle have given straight answers. And perhaps that's part of the discussion that we can have. My guess to that, my guess is that there's a reason why, and that is because if you do say something that is going to be unpopular, you're not going to get elected. And some of the choices that whoever is mayor is going to have to make, they're going to be unpopular choices.
I mean, yep, you know, those are good points. I would just, you know, in terms of the dynamics of the race, Preckwinkle needs to radically restructure and alter the
narrative,
the arc here,
right?
Because that we had a new survey which people have talked about that had Lightfoot at 53%. And it had Preckwinkle at 17.
Yes.
I mean, it's mind bending.
It is,
And
particularly compared to where they were. Well, this is actually a WTTW poll that we did in partnership with Cranes and with Temkin Harris, and it's what I have found particularly astounding is that everybody knew who Toni Preckwinkle was. She was sort of seen as a given even when there were 14 candidates, but Lori Lightfoot was seen as, okay, who? And particularly after Mayor Rahm Emanuel announced that he wasn't going to run for a third term, I mean, it was as if she was almost written off. Mm-hmm. People a year ago didn't know who she was. She wouldn't have even made the polls, presumably.
Well, I mean, this is emerging as the real change election, maybe the first one we've had since 1983 with Harold Washington, a dramatic change election that had been preceded by the election of the first woman mayor, Jane Byrne. I mean, 1979, Jane Byrne gets elected, 1983, Harold Washington, and then in 87, he got reelected and died just 6 months later. But those were change elections. We really haven't had that kind of thing. And, you know, one of the things that is driving this is the arrest by the FBI and the charging of Alderman Eddie Burke, the Tribune's reporting on Joe Berrios.
Right.
And you heard Lori Lightfoot driving that narrative home,
yes,
you know, in terms of when she would go on the attack. And it was fairly infrequently against Preckwinkle. It was Burke and Berrios.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it really is, though, up to Lightfoot, up to Preckwinkle to try to turn this thing around.
I agree.
And let's face it.
I agree.
A week from tomorrow, we're going to be counting the votes.
Absolutely. And I like this format tonight. Kathy Byrne had a question tonight. I liked how there were different Chicagoans or people affected by
Chicago. I thought they did a very good job.
I thought so, too. And I really commend Tamon Bradley for really saying to Tony Preckwinkle, please answer the question. Because I know in these forums, it's just very, we get a lot of surface. And I think you both are right. We need to get to these issues, and how will you change Chicago? All right, you are going to be the next mayor, first female African-American mayor of Chicago. What are you going to do to change it? And I really found Preckwinkle, to both of your points tonight, really just deliberately not answering and not getting specific. And I think you're right. I think she's going to have to change that strategy if she wants to build or gain some ground.
Well, she's not going to change because that's who she is. You know, I've joked in the past that she's...
It's part of what people have liked about her, and perhaps she should run on a bit more and try to elevate instead of shying away from it. Or, you know, you can't necessarily change who you are. And were she to be running commercials, which she isn't anymore, so that says a lot.
Yeah.
But were she to be, maybe you say something like that and that it can be seen as a selling point for politicians.
Mm-hmm.
They're both thoughtful policy wonks.
Very much.
But
yeah,
they have absorbed the lesson that, and especially Preckwinkle, that you just don't want to commit to those hard decisions. You know, she brags of having made them. She has cut millions of dollars out of the county budget and laid off 1,500 people, she says, reduced the headcount. But she didn't generally talk about it in advance of an election. Certainly her public employee union benefactors, the people who gave her millions of dollars, but who now seem to have cut off the cash flow, they're looking at the same polls that now the public is getting to see. They don't want to hear her promising to cut things any more than taxpayers want to hear promises to raise taxes. Over the weekend, Lightfoot floated this plan. It was a variation of JB's graduated income tax. Tax billionaires like me, not people like you.
Right.
Lightfoot floated this idea. Well, let's tax big law firms like the
like
one
mine
that I'm in charge
right
of, and big accounting firms. Now, not little sole proprietors that have hung out a shingle, but big ones. Well, how much money? Oh, well, you know, look, just big law firms. Will that really raise enough? Will that get $1 billion?
No.
Which
no
is, you know, what we saw Lawrence
no
Massal say that we need in this
well
first term.
And that's where I
pensions
do think I
just
can
for pensions
go
right
round and round in circles on this. I, of course, as both a resident, a voter, a citizen, and a journalist, you want answers to these questions. We should demand answers to those questions. And yet, how much is the media collectively culpable for also pouncing on any politician that dare give a specific, particularly if you have an opponent that does not do so? You're dragging down your chances, your opportunities. Most likely, you see this time and time again in polls, not the horse race polls, but polls, for example, by the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute that continually test where Illinois residents stand on a variety of issues. And you'll see, I think we need to do something about schools. I think we need to do something about infrastructure. Do I want to pay for it? No. I think we could spend a whole show getting into part of the reasons for that. And I think that a lot of, particularly in Chicago and Illinois, politicians by and large have not given a whole lot of reasons to trust them with my hired-in money.
Mm-hmm.
Do I believe that they are always spending it in my best interest? And of course, everybody's version of best interest is different. And so
voters
that's part
want
of the difficulty
magic beans.
But right, that's part
it's
of it. And
true
we as the media need to make that clear,
so
I think, in our reporting.
Politicians promise us magic beans because we get what we want.
Right. And let me ask you guys this. Do you think Lori Lightfoot is running away with this? Because I do agree with you, Amanda. A year ago, I would have never put her in the top five, let alone the top two, and think she'd force the, well, she'd be in charge. She, you know, Tony.
Right.
She'd
Tony's the underdog now.
She's the underdog now. Do you think her strategy, she had kind of this anti-machine, this progressive candidate. I personally, as again, a resident, a voter, a journalist, I love the TV commercials. I thought they were refreshing with her daughter playing with the golden doodle in the background doing the floss. You know, do you think that helped her with the voters and that's why maybe she's taking this commanding lead?
I think her earlier ads, now that's an ad that's appeared in the last few days.
Yeah, yeah, last
week. The one with the daughter.
Right.
I think her earlier ads were driving the narrative that's put her in this large lead, which is, you know, I'm the reformer. I'm the change agent. And so you hear the two of them, Preckwinkle and Lightfoot, often what they're talking, no matter what it is they're talking about, the mm-hmm. specific question, if you go up to a few thousand feet and look down at it, each is arguing, I'm the change agent. And, you know, Preckwinkle has a case to make. She turned 72 on St. Patrick's Day. She has a long career where she has not, you know, where she has tried to be a change agent.
She said she was a progressive before it was cool.
Right.
You know, and there's absolutely a case to be made for that. Her problem is Ed Burke and Joe Berrios and Lightfoot and her supporters are hanging them around
right.
Preckwinkle's neck. And it I know that for Preckwinkle and her supporters, it feels terribly unfair. The other day in one of these forums, Preckwinkle was asked, by Phil Ponce, your colleague, which of the things your opponent has said is the most unfair? And instantly, Preckwinkle leaped in and said that I'm not a reformer and that she's the change agent.
Mm-hmm. Interesting, yes.
So I have two thoughts there, and one of them is actually, again, related to the subject of this program, and that is journalism. Mm-hmm. Again, and I think actually Lightfoot was very much helped by the Chicago Sun-Times endorsement, which is fascinating on its own because for a while the paper got out of the business of making endorsements. I think many a viewer,
if I could just jump in, I think that put her in first place.
That's, yeah.
Without the Sun-Times endorsement, she wouldn't be in this race.
Mm-hmm. It's really incredible. And it wasn't just an endorsement on the inner page. It was a front page, huge endorsement. And again, maybe some people, I think, are even confused. Why are papers in the business of making endorsements? Should they
and
be?
The
should
all
they
the
not
more,
be?
Amanda, because it's partly owned by labor unions.
Right.
And it was
which
perceived,
they do point out, but still.
Yeah, yeah. It was perceived that Preckwinkle had that locked up.
And did she clearly
right.
did
but
not.
The labor right. unions divide. Yeah.
So it is. It's a fascinating yes. study. I wish that I could have been there for part of that. And I mean, you can watch the endorsement sessions, but you can't watch as those discussions. And again, it is not my area of research to say what, how good are endorsements these days. By and large, we've seen a whole ton of people, now that it is down
oh
to
gosh,
two,
yeah.
get into that race.
Sure.
But people question, you know, how strong is a newspaper endorsement these days? In this case, I'm not sure how much it always matters, but in this case it very much did so, and I'm sure there's some sort of academic study in terms of what readers think about that, because to be clear, and I always like to point this out, reporters are not the ones doing that.
Right.
Journalists, those who are covering the ins and outs of the race, it is the editorial board who is in the business of consistently writing opinions, taking positions, and that is different than what each of us do.
Look,
on
some
the
of my friends in the public employee unions, you know, concede that Preckwinkle and they were not ready to run against Lightfoot. They figured they'd be, and they were hoping that they'd be up against Bill Daley,
right?
And it would have been much easier in that case to mm-hmm. portray Preckwinkle as the change agent, Preckwinkle as the progressive, mm-hmm. and you know, just tag Daley as the multimillionaire. You know, he gave us the top two sheets of his. Of his
tax
concealed,
return,
the,
tax
know, the rest
yeah.
of his tax returns were yeah. concealed, but it showed that in 2017 he made $2.5 million. Now, Lori
not
Lightfoot
bad.
Made about $1 million.
Right.
That's not bad.
No,
I'll take that.
Sure,
but you know, it she's just a much harder target, and they haven't figured it
it's
out.
Changed the
and,
race,
and they weren't. They just were not fast enough on their feet to adjust.
I'm glad you brought up endorsements, too, because mm-hmm. that's very interesting to me. Now, with everybody, it used to just be the Tribune and the Sun-Times are the two biggest entities. And, of course, the teachers' union, the police union, everyone's going to back their particular candidate. And we kind of would see where they would fall along. I think this race has blown all of that out of the water. People that we thought are unions or journalistic entities that we thought were going to endorse certain candidates have not, as you both just pointed out. But then you get people like Chance the Rapper or Kanye, or you're getting celebrities, are there too many endorsements? Do you think voters want that? Do you think they, or do you think that's a distraction to them?
No, I think they find, I've got three adult children. I think they were entertained that, what, Chance the Rapper's, what, Kanye gave some money? What?
Right.
Now, the young lady who was the beneficiary of that finished in sixth place.
Right, Amara Enya.
Got about 8% of the vote, Amara Enya. And then today held a news conference teasing reporters, come on out and listen to my thoughts on an endorsement for mayor. And then she didn't endorse anybody.
Right, and then nobody cared, and then everybody
left. She didn't follow Chance. Right. She says, well, he's going to go his way, I'm going to go my way.
Right.
I don't know that there are per se too many. I think this is an area, again, where I try to be very careful and deliberate in coverage of endorsements. There are, for example, unions that carries with it a lot of weight in terms of money, in terms of membership, in terms of door knocking.
Mm-hmm.
How often, as reporters, should we be echoing, this is who Chance the Rapper likes? He can make a statement. He has more social media followers than I do. Sorry, everybody, but darn on me.
Right.
But he has a platform. How much is it our responsibility to elevate that? Clearly, he has put in a lot of time and energy into caring about the city of Chicago, so there are reasons for that. But I just guess it is, again, for me, the area where I try and look at it is, all right, if I'm going to cover an endorsement for one person, do I cover it for another?
That,
and what
and
brings it above,
right.
What takes it to the level of being worthy of people's attention versus people using their own platforms without my making that choice. I mean, it gets back, I think, to a degree to what actually Lightfoot, as you brought up, Mike, in both the Chicago Tonight WTTW debate and then also the WGN panel this evening, where she sort of admonished the question. She did not want to answer. She said, I'm not going to take the bait and talk about what you, my opponent, Tony Preckwinkle, have gotten wrong about me. And then also in response to questions tonight, she said, I don't like lists. Let's focus on the issues.
Right.
And she is able, I think, to do that because she is so far ahead.
She is.
She doesn't need to go on the attack. So that is something that we need to all, I think, collectively recognize. Tony Preckwinkle is in a different position. Maybe that would work for her. But classically, you can do that, take that quote high road if you are in the lead. But is she right? Is it wrong to ask those questions that are perceived as gotchas, that are looking back at political ties and past decisions? And yet, I think,
no.
As reporters, you need to ask them. There is no way that those aren't substantive when you're asking somebody to be an executive for a city. All you can do is look back on their record, particularly if you're not going to commit to solutions going forward on major issues.
Particularly, you hear them say,
so, sure.
We're going to hold police accountable.
Right.
Both of the candidates say, we're going to hold police accountable. I'm going to put, in Preckwinkle's case, a new superintendent in and hold him or her accountable. They need to be held accountable,
yes.
The candidates.
Yeah, absolutely. You are listening to Amanda Vinicky and Mike Flannery and Andrea and the reporters. We've been talking about post-debate Lori Lightfoot, Tony Preckwinkle on WGN-TV and WGN Radio moments ago. The TTW debate was last week. The Flannery debate is tomorrow night. We're going to be talking about it on Fox
32 at 6 p.m. And I'm soliciting
questions.
We'll
be listening. Hey, absolutely.
Yeah.
And you're getting some, too. And we're
what do you
want
to ask?
Text us if you want, 312-981-7200. You can have Mike ask a question of one of the candidates tomorrow. We have a couple questions that we're going to have you ask to Mike. And take a quick break here. We'll get you newscast. And then we're going to find out a little bit more about Mike and Amanda and their backgrounds and some of the favorite stories they've covered over the years. More after this on WGN.
Let's get back to Andrea Dallas and the reporters on 720 WGN.
All right, welcome back to the program. Thank you, David Jennings. We are joined tonight by Amanda Vinicky and Mike Flannery, and we've been talking a lot about Tony Preckwinkle and Lori Lightfoot, but we want to find out about both of you and how you got into this crazy but fun and ever-changing and exciting business of ours. Amanda, you are with WTTW-TV. We can watch you pretty much every night on TV. Thank you, by the way, for taping or doing your show and rushing over here. We appreciate
that. No problem. Thank you to the Lyft driver that got me here safely and quickly.
Very good. Tell us about you, where you've been, where you went to school, and why you wanted to become a reporter.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Those are a lot of questions.
Yeah.
Let's see. Let's backtrack, I suppose, a little. We'll trace
it. Let's start
it
from the beginning.
So
as I pull up my chair.
At the beginning, I don't know when I first decided I wanted to be a journalist, but actually, this is funny. I had a college advisor with whom I still stay in touch, who actually, I was very involved in student government. He was our student government advisor. I was president of the student senate, and, you know, going back in high school, was president of student council. So I feel like it is not the same as running for mayor and being on the hot seat there, though I have had to do my share of being on the other end of debates and interviews and such, and that is definitely something that I think I try to have continue inform my experience when I'm saying, hey, I want an answer to that question. And you can't worry too much as a reporter about how what you put out there is going to be perceived, because it's the news, particularly as a political reporter. That is not my job. My job isn't to be nice to a politician or what have you, but right.
It's to get answers.
My job is to get answers and to be honest and to make sure that what I'm putting out there is fair, to the point that if I were to be reading it as a friend, a colleague, a supporter of whoever that politician is, that I would be able to look at that and say, I may not like it, but it's the truth. And so that is definitely something that informs my experience. Anyway, a point to that long little escapade was this advisor who, sorry, Willard, I will email you back, just sent me there was a leadership conference that I had done, and you had these little bios in it, and it was like, my dream is to host the Today Show or something.
Did you put, and my dream sure. is to host Chicago tonight?
I put the Today Show was okay. What I put. And I don't know that it is. That's an early morning, although for Kelly Ripa's salary or whoever hosts. I love you, Chicago tonight.
We're still trying to achieve that.
Right? I love you, Chicago tonight. I might do it. But anyway, so it's been for a while. It was, you know, on the school paper. In high school, I was fortunate enough. I went to Lyons Township, and we had WLTL and also a TV station. So I was in the thick of it then, had a silly morning radio show for a little bit there, going bananas with Amanda in the morning. That was what it was called. So it's been a ways.
And I think you were an intern at Fox 32
I
News.
I was an
right?
intern at Fox 32 News. Better believe
After
it.
After the University of Illinois?
During.
ILL?
That was my
really?
That was a summer internship. Mm-hmm.
Did you know Mr. Flannery at this point?
I mean,
or were you at CBS at that point, Mike?
Yeah, he was not.
I was still over.
You
at
were still at Channel 2.
Channel 2.
Okay.
Right?
But his predecessor, Jack Kennedy, was wonderful and took me under his wing because I wanted to do political reporting.
Yeah.
He was retired out to the Tucson, Arizona area.
Oh.
He was awesome. He was great. And he was like, you're interested in
Amanda's
this. Okay,
still,
let's go.
And there you are.
Still known as the best intern ever.
See? That's a great
that.
Moniker to
Thank
have.
You.
And then you went
I'll take
from,
it.
Then you were in Springfield for a while.
So yeah, actually my first job out of school was with a newspaper, The Doings. And then I also did a lot of freelance work for the Daily Herald. So I
yeah,
did
sure.
that before going to the University of Illinois Springfield, which has this incredible program. So any aspiring journalists, particularly those interested in government work, it's called Public Affairs Reporting, and it is a graduate school program, 1 year long, where you intern with a station at the State House or a newspaper, what have you, some sort of media outlet, and mine was with public radio. So I spent quite a bit of time there in Springfield. After that internship, I went briefly to a public radio station in Iowa, but then when a job opening came back in Springfield, I was like, yes, this is the dream, covering Illinois politics for real, and I spent some time there is. It was Bureau Chief of Illinois Public Radio, which is kind of loosely a collaboration between all of the media, all of the public radio stations in the state, and we would do their capital coverage, and that was my job for, gosh, a decade or so. Yeah.
And then you came to TTW.
And then I came to WTTW. They were interested in State House news and really making sure that they were covering in depth, particularly as Illinois went through a budget crisis and calamity like nothing it had seen before.
Mm-hmm.
And so I began just doing sort of hits for them from Springfield. And then they ultimately brought me on full time as a correspondent, which it was great. I loved my time in the capital city and with public radio, but was definitely excited for a new opportunity and getting up to Chicago and closer to my mom and dad, who I'm quite sure are listening now. So mwah, thanks for being supportive and
Thank
awesome.
Thank you, Mr. and Mrs. Beneke.
Yeah, they're the best.
Well, I love watching you. You never shy away from a question. and I'm so glad you're here tonight, and I'm glad we're learning more about both of your backgrounds. Mr. Flannery, Mr. Flannery, as our producer Vivian calls you, I watched you on Channel 2 for many, many, many years. Now you've been at Fox since 2010.
I started in this racket in 10th grade.
All right, let's hear
okay,
it.
There was a kid.
Origins and background of Mike Flannery.
I went to an all-boys Catholic high school, grew up in Washington, D.C., and the editor-in-chief of the student newspaper, a kid named Jimmy Keough, who was a friend of mine, asked me, hey, the priests are, Augustinian priests are going to impose a tuition increase. You're on a scholarship, right? And I said, yeah. He says, you're the perfect guy to do this story. It's not going to affect you. So here, you've got to call Mrs. Modzelewski, and you got to make an appointment with the priest who was the head of the school.
And when was this? What year?
This would have been... Actually, I was riding a brontosaurus to school.
No, stop it. The earth
it was
not cooling.
Was it AD or BC?
No.
This would have been 19...
80s?
No, this 90s. Would have been 1967.
Okay. Okay.
And I...
So did you write the story?
This,
and
I
so
love that this high schooler is looking out already for objectivity.
Yeah.
So I sat down. I sat down and... With Father Andrews, who was the dean of the school, and I said, you know, and I took in just off, I hadn't even planned it. I had two or three questions, but I said, you know, Eddie Kane is one of 11 kids, and his father's a cop, and if the tuition goes up $20 a year, he's going to have to transfer out. He won't be able to come back next year. I saw a little bead of sweat break out on Father Andrew's brow, and I was hooked.
This is fun.
Here I was doing my dime store Mike Wallace imitation, and I was hooked.
Excellent.
So I became the editor.
And you were good at it.
I became the editor of the high school paper. I got a free ride to Georgetown, and I became the editor of the school paper there.
Okay.
And then I got a job right out of college. I got a job at the Sun-Times.
Okay.
And Joel Weissman Metropolitan editor of the Sun-Times. In 1974, he sent me to City Hall to be Harry Golden Jr.'s understudy.
Oh, excellent.
The guy after whom the press room at City Hall is named.
That's right. Yeah, I've seen the name on the press room.
People ask me, who was that guy? I said, he was my original mentor.
And you can attest to the press room has not changed much at all since then. I mean, there's still the stacks of newspapers, the political pins.
Right. But I'll tell you, I mean, when I first started the Sun-Times, they sent me down to the to 1121 South State, which was where the police headquarters was before 35th in Michigan.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, that overnight crew in there, it was a different world, and thank God it's gone.
Yes.
They were all drinking, or not all, but several of them were drinking.
Some.
There was racial invective.
I'm guessing it was pretty smoky and gross.
Lots of cigars going on there. Yeah. And then when did you go to Channel 2?
In 1980.
Okay. And you were there for 20 years?
I was there for 30 years.
30 years.
1980 to 2010.
And then went to Fox.
And then at Fox, yeah. And you know what? This show at Fox, Flannery Fired Up, that airs on Friday nights at 9:30, I'm having the time of my life.
That's the best.
Here, as I approach my dotage, I'm about, you know, I've had the show. It's some of the most fun that I ever have. And
How come? Just because you get to ask the questions and you have more time or what?
Yeah, it's
long form.
It's a half hour.
Yeah.
And you're not just nailed down by the 90-second
package that you have to do.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that it was actually kind of, it was some constraints that were being imposed at my previous place of employment that actually sort of helped provoke me to move over. And I'm really glad I did. And they've been they're willing to take a chance. They're willing to be imaginative, take a risk over at Fox, and you know, and in this environment, why not?
Absolutely, it's a perfect climate. I have to ask. I'm so looking forward to the answer to this question from both of you. And usually, I can think ahead and think of different stories. Whoever I interview, I ask them, "What's one of the best stories you've ever covered, or the story?" Or stories, because some people pick two or three.
So I was going to say, people ask if this is the craziest political environment ever?
No, I want to know what the most impactful story was to each of you. And you know what? And I say this, and I know it's hard because of both of your experience and the stories you've covered. I mean, you've covered Ryan and Blagojevich and the Dailies and Harold Washington. I know there's so many out there, so it's almost like asking you to pick your favorite parent or your favorite child. But what story have you covered that as soon as I asked that, it popped into your head? I'm kind of being long-winded about it because I see you both thinking.
I know.
All right, Mike, tell me.
So early on in the first year or two that I was at CBS, I did a we did this, you know, and back in the day, you got to give CBS a lot of credit. It was sort of an obtuse story about these insurance trusts that was under the ERISA Act, without making everybody's eyes glaze over. In a nutshell,
You're a talented reporter.
Congress was trying to do something good, but they ended up inadvertently empowering these fraudsters to go from one place to another, setting up these phony baloney insurance companies, and then leaving families on the hook. So there was a family over by, they lived in the shadow of Cabrini Green, and the father had gotten his insurance through one of these fraudsters, and his son was losing his vision and needed surgery, couldn't get it. The Illinois Department of Insurance stepped in. That kid and several other people got the treatment that they needed. Then I would say...
Wow.
Another one was, I got an Emmy Award for some coverage of a story that Phil Kadner at the Southtown had also done a lot of work on, about the Dixmoor, Illinois Park District in the South Suburbs.
Oh, sure.
And the scandalous misappropriation of funds. Alderman Kerry Austin's ex-husband was the head of it at the time. He ended up going to prison. Hundreds of thousands of dollars disappeared from this poor town. That became, at the time, it was the only, maybe there have been one or two since, it was the only unit of government in Illinois abolished by court order.
No kidding.
Huh. That is a question
because,
I'm going to have to look up.
Because of the stories in the digging district, and Phil did, yeah.
And one of the scamaramas they were running was they were giving out, they had formed a Dixmoor Park District Police Department. And they had given 80 or 100 badges out. There was testimony in a federal trial that they were selling them for at least $5,000 or more cash. And there was a young man named Terrence T. Fly McSween or something. DEA agents raided him, and when they broke into his apartment at 3 in the morning, found him with a bunch of drugs. He reached in next to the bed. One of the agents thought he was going for a gun. Instead, he pulled out a badge and said, I'm one of you.
Oh no!
I'm a Dixmoor Park District cop.
Oh my! This is God. The lesson that I have to say you learn through being a journalist, and that is, I mean, you hear that and you're like, who would have the gall possibly do that? Who
Completely.
Would have the nerve?
And they did
to
it?
Even think about it,
and
let alone
it.
Doing it.
Right?
It's not a movie. It is continually shocking, and I think that is the lesson to, again, any sort of aspiring journalist, is when your impulse is to say, no way, no how. Nobody would do that.
Right. Keep digging.
Keep digging.
Keep digging.
Yes, wait.
There
are people. I'm not saying everybody. There are good people in this world who would never. And then
there's the J.B. McSweeney.
Yeah. The Rita Cromwell.
T-Fly.
Right? T-Fly, who's hanging out with Rita.
What about you?
He was a member of the Traveling Vice Lords, was the testimony from DEA agents.
All right, Amanda.
Okay, so my stories are nowhere near. The ones that came to mind are not that cool. But I love them. I think, to me, some of the stories that matter most are the ones that you just have to get out of your system.
Yes.
And it's not necessarily the long hours. I mean, I just was part of this documentary. It took a lot of work looking through archival. There's the stories that take a lot of time, and then there's the stories that are just fun to do, and those are my favorites, and I'll also kind of cheat and do two.
You can absolutely do two.
They're both just stories that I did on my own that I was like, I need the world to know, and they're just fun. And one was, I did a 5K race in this small town in Illinois called Arnsville, and there are probably a ton of stories there. It's actually, you know, a town that has a lot of immigrants, the Tyson Meat Factory and such, Cargill. But no, the story that I did is just a festival called Burgoo, and it was fun because I went there just to run a 5K, happened to have my radio device in my car, and I started talking to people, and it was like, there are a lot of characters here. This is just fun. I had never heard of this. I'm going to do a story.
I never heard of the town.
It was another one where it turned into, you know, an award-winning piece.
Yes.
And it had been a day that was just supposed to be about good times. But by virtue of having a microphone, I would ask a lot of questions no matter what. But you really have license. And some people for sure close the door on you. But other people open their hearts and their mouths and do not stop. And it is wonderful. And so it was just one of those really satisfying experiences. And another one that was just fun to do, and he has moved on, so I try not to knock or anything, but Governor Bruce Rauner, I did this radio piece, and it was kind of the perfect radio piece on his dropping of G's.
Oh, yes.
How when he would speak, even formally, so during speeches, because I notice I myself have a tendency to do that in casual conversation, like now we're just chatting. I did it right there. But that is a very different thing than when you are reading from a teleprompter. It's something that is very practiced, and he would do this. And again, it's not necessarily a profound story that changed votes or policy, but it was the story that everybody talked about beforehand,
right,
and wanted to know the answer to. What is going on here? It was the conversation that people in the Capitol halls were having every day. And so it was, hey, I'm going to come down to an answer for this. And I was actually working out of WBEZ on Navy Pier, a collaborator at the time. And, you know, I just stayed there until like 10 o'clock, met my friends out late that night instead of meeting them because I needed it out of my system. And it ended up being this wonderful piece that felt good to do and I think brought people joy. And
so I heard
that's
that
why
piece.
I love
it was
to
indeed
ask.
A wonderful
I love these
piece,
questions.
But you need to ask your colleague, your NPR colleague, Scott Simon, about his piece in 1982 or 1986 on James R. Thompson. He traveled. Thompson was campaigning for re-election in both those years, and I can't remember which year he did this in. You know, it could have even been 1978. But he followed Thompson around the Chicago area, and it was chatting, traveling, campaigning. Then he hooked a ride with them, and they went to Southern Illinois.
Okay.
And it was campaigning.
So we switched the draws.
By golly. You could have hornswoggled me.
Wow.
Now
that's one to look up. Yeah.
So, archival piece. Yeah. So ask Scott about that
because
it had the same impact. It was, people said, what?
See
people at both ends of the state said, what?
See how the stories that you guys have done have impacted change and have impacted your listeners and your viewers.
To me, it's the strength in having people that cover any sort of subject area closely.
I agree.
Beat reporting, I'm a believer in beat reporting, although branching out, that's healthy for everybody too. And yet having somebody that notices enough to say, hey, wait a second, something is funny about what's going on. And that's at the heart of any story, whether it be something about a politician's pattern of speech or something that looks really fishy with a small town park.
So the question became, was it intentional? Did he know
it was doing
it? Oh, I'm
sure it was intentional.
Or was it just natural empathy that a politician has, mm-hmm, and you kind of want to relate to people where they are,
right?
So that when you're in Redbud or
Cairo or Carbondale,
the North Side, you just relate to people where they are,
or the South Side where we grew up. So you never know. Amanda Vinicky and Mike Flannery are my guests here on Andrea and the Reporters. We will ask them when they come back the stories or the projects that they are still chasing, still pursuing. More after this on 720 WGN. All right, we are rounding out the program here with Amanda Vinicky and Mike Flannery. Thank you both so much for being here, but I cannot let you both go without telling me what is next for you. Mike, we know you have your debate tomorrow night on Fox 32 from 6 until 7 p.m.
6 to 7,
Watch
Tony Preckwinkle.
That.
Yeah, Tony Preckwinkle and Lori Lightfoot.
But I want to know what's next for Mike Flannery.
I want to follow in the footsteps. I thought the WGN debate tonight here was really very good.
Yes.
Kudos to all the folks involved in that. You know, my weekend show, Flannery Fired Up, I spend a huge amount of time on that show. I basically book it, and I write it, and do the interviews, and it's kind of a little cottage industry for me, so it's a lot of fun, and I get a huge kick out of it. And, you know, if I were to pick one thing that we do on that show and that I'd like to get deeper into, I'd like to parse out the parts of Chicago that are growing. I mean, we're sitting here above the Chicago River right now in this beautiful booming part of town where in the last 25 years, the city of Chicago and private developers have built the second largest city in Illinois.
Yes.
In the heart of the largest city. And it's really quite amazing. And the construction cranes are still going in some parts of downtown. Other parts, not so much.
Hot.
But I'd love to explore that and look at why is this booming? What are those industries?
Mm-hmm.
You know, who are these people living in all these new buildings, all these new residences?
Willie Wilson.
And what do they do?
Exactly.
What do they do? And how do we get more of this? And how can we spread it around a little bit?
Amanda, how about you? What's next for Amanda Vinicky?
Whew. Okay. So I was saying that, I mean, just my phone, my notebooks are like a window to my soul. And that is evidently of a crazy person because my list of stories that I want to pursue are miles long. Like, think Santa's list of naughty and nice. And that is my list of story ideas.
I see a book coming.
Several. I am going to, of course, just be following whatever happens in Springfield, and there is a heck of a lot percolating. The graduated income tax would be huge. If you look at pot abortion bills that are up, I mean, I particularly am very focused on energy policy, and right now there's a huge movement that you have some of the renewable coalition, but remarkably joining up with Exelon. And so what is going to happen there? Because, of course, that has huge repercussions for climate change and in general the environment. So that's probably the one that is closest on my list. Also following up with that Janus decision. I mean, gun violence, you pick a topic and
there's
I want to cover it. There are too
I
many.
Know.
So I'm just going to stick with looking to April 2nd and then the end of May, and then I will take a deep breath because those are the big times for we political reporters that cover both city and state politics.
Keep on keeping on. Please, both of you, come back. This is going to be very exciting next week until the election. And Mike Flanagan, Amanda Vinicky, two of the absolute best political reporters in the business.
Thank you very much.
You are so kind.
Thank you very much. Please come back again. It's Mike Flannery and Amanda Vinicky. You'll have the podcast up in just a little bit on WGNRadio.com.